All right, welcome to the Sports Ethos Los Angeles Chargers podcast, finishing up divisional weekend. Brandon, I got to ask you, because I don't think I asked you last year, how does it feel to start a show at 10 o'clock Eastern instead of almost midnight?
Oh, it's great. I'm actually not tired for once, probably for the first time all year.
That's a plus. Like,
yeah, you know, considering that usually when we start, it's like 11:30. It's like an hour and a half from now, if not more, and I'm halfway in bed. So it's great. I can't complain. And the thing is, we got two exciting football games today out of it, so it's like I'm even, you know, I got more energy now that I'm just starting the show early because we have, you know, some good stuff to talk about. So.
Yes, we do. And Shane, even on the West Coast, this schedule is just so nice.
It is. Yeah. I mean, I don't mind the, you know, the, well, for us, it's 5:15 start time for the late games. Cause
that's
it's great. just because it's, you know, it's very much, like you can watch it while you eat dinner and it's, yeah, it's just, it's good. And then it's done at, you know, 8:30, and you can just, you know, relax for a little bit instead of feeling like you got to go to bed right away. but you know, this is good too.
Yeah,
it's not like, it's nothing like Hawaii time, that's for sure.
Oh yeah,
that is an insane football schedule.
it's nuts. I waking up at 5 in the morning and then finishing up at 2. Yeah, there's something like that. Okay, so Shane, I'll start with you. And this entire game, I mean, this entire game with the Ravens and the turnovers and kind of just giving up on Lamar Jackson's part of this offense, at least other than Mark Andrews. The entire time of this game, I was thinking about two teams in very similar trajectories, similar kinds of games, and then, well, not kinds of games, but similar kinds of games this weekend, and then thinking about what their future holds and what they do in 2025. And those two teams are the Ravens and the Lions, because it felt like for both of these teams going into the offseason, they really tailor-made their teams to be Super Bowl or bust in a way that was just kind of very different from the rest of the league in a lot of different ways. Yeah. Where do both of these two teams go? Because you could make a legitimate argument, even though the Lions are kind of in year two of this situation compared to the Ravens. The Ravens are in dire straits at this point, considering what's happened the last 5-6 years under Lamar Jackson. Where do you go this offseason? Where are the steps of improvement? Obviously the Lions with all their injuries, that's part of it too. You could touch on that a little bit, but it's like, I'm just trying to figure out organizationally, you come back in 2 weeks after dealing with these tough losses and you start planning out 2025 and what you're going to do in the offseason. When you built what I would argue for both of these teams, custom made rosters, perfect rosters to get to a Super Bowl and just not get there.
Yeah, I mean, especially with Detroit, I really feel that way. But I'll start with Baltimore since we just watched them. This is a frustrating organization to me because they are, I mean, this is objectively a very well-run operation. It is. You know, it's, they have, I think, the second longest tenured head coach in the league. You know, and there's a reason he's stuck around this long, because he's good. And, you know, I think the Ravens really don't have too many issues. It's just, you know, I mean, earlier this year, they lost a step or two on defense after losing McDonald, but as the season went on, they, you know, they started to click again and figure things out. And, you know, in the regular season, I mean, Lamar Jackson, Derrick Henry, that was, I mean, they were like probably the best quarterback running back duo in the league. Yet every year we get to the playoffs and Lamar, I don't know what happens, but it's like he forgets how to throw the ball or something. Because this has happened many, I mean, there were a few times in the playoffs where they went into a game and they weren't favored, so like it wasn't really a surprise when they lost, and it was just like, yeah, whatever. But like this, where I don't know if they were favored, but they certainly had a good chance. And then last year, they were definitely the favorite to win the AFC Championship. You know, and all the way back to, what was it, 2019, when they were the one seed, and Tennessee, the sixth seed, came into their house and embarrassed them. Yeah, and, you know, when you look at it, it's, I mean, the defense, sure, they have their part in it. But, you know, really the common theme through all these games is Lamar, for some reason, just can't put it together in January. And I don't know if it's nerves or if I don't know. I don't know what it is. I am still trying to figure that out.
Hello, but, Will. Welcome in.
Hello, Will.
What up? What up, guys?
What up? What up?
That being said, you know, I don't think you move on from him because he's one of the best quarterbacks in the league. You know, good luck finding somebody in the immediate future that's better than him. Yeah. Yeah. Spoiler alert. You're not going to, you know, so, but it's just, they have to have an answer come playoff time. And I thought Derrick Henry would maybe be the thing that got them over the hump, just having an extra strong run game. And, you know, it helped. They got closer. I mean, they, you know, they came within a 2-point conversion of tying this thing up and probably going to overtime, you know.
What about Detroit here for you? What's your thought process with Detroit? Why do you think it's more of a question mark in 2025 of what they do compared to Baltimore?
Well, because they're probably, not probably, they are, I would say, about 99% chance going to lose both their coordinators. So, which, you know, we've seen what happened to, you know, like the 23 Eagles. Sorry to bring that up, Brandon, but
this year's making up for it. That's fine.
True. But you know, look, I like Dan Campbell. I think he's a good dude. Players obviously love him. They play hard for him, but I definitely think he is dependent on good coordinators. And so if you're going to lose both of them, it's going to be rough next year. You know, it's even if they finish strong, it's going to be a bumpy ride to start. I mean, long story short, I think their best chance at winning it all was this season. You know, it's, I mean, first of all, you're going to have to hit on both coordinators, which there's no guarantee that they're going to. You know, and even if they do, it's still, you know, it's all that new. It's all something that you're going to have to adjust to. So we'll see how it works out. You know, I mean, obviously they're still going to have a good roster, but yeah, just a tough break for them. Honestly, this year, I mean, you get the one seed, but then you have all these injuries and everything and piling up. And then obviously, game against Washington, you did not look like yourselves. So, yeah, now they're moving on, and you're going to Cancun.
And Brandon, to continue with this, the future of those two franchises, but also, you know, we looked at this Lions Commanders matchup in particular of the Commanders can't hang, you know, with them in terms of a high scoring game, and they did, but which is impressive for, you know, the Commanders, but it is difficult for Detroit and Baltimore to sit in the offseason and wonder what might have been, but also what they do.
Yeah. For Detroit's the bigger shock, but watching that game yesterday especially watching it at a bar with other some Detroit fans, some Washington fans, some just football fans in general. Watching that game, I just couldn't believe what I was seeing. We knew that the injuries for Detroit were going to rear their ugly head. We knew that it was going to be an issue, but I did not think they were just going to allow the Commanders to basically, you know, not even 40, they hung 45 on them. It wasn't even competitive in the second half of the game. And I can't believe Jared Goff really wasn't under pressure a whole lot yesterday and still managed to turn the ball over, what, 3-4 times? He's a guy that, I've said it before, does, but if you make him throw a lot, he's going to make a lot of mistakes. He's going to throw picks. That's what happened yesterday. But so, looking forward, I mean, like what Shane said, they're going to lose both coordinators. I don't even think that there's a doubt they're going to lose both. He's a likable guy. He's a good culture guy, but he's not an X's and O's guy. He's a very rah-rah guy. He has a better demeanor than my head coach.
Dan Campbell, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Dan Campbell, you know, Dan's got a lot of, you know, he's
a motivator.
He's better than that. Yeah, he's a motivator. He's better than my head coach. It's just that, but between the ears, there's nothing in there. So, you know, it's hard
just
to
kneecaps.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to win football games when you have a head coach that's not really involved with the team from, you know, a preparation standpoint, from a play calling standpoint, from even a defensive standpoint. No matter what it is, your head coach to me has to be involved in some way, shape, or form in order for you to succeed. When you have more of those CEO type head coaches, I feel like you can't win with that because because your head coach ties the whole thing together. So if your head coach is kind of more so hands off than really being, you know, digging into the guys, you're going to have the team on two separate pages, which is kind of what the Lions were the second half of the season. I mean, they almost lost the game to the Packers at home. That game was close, and they probably should have lost that game. That was the first time I was like, uh-oh, they're in trouble. And then the very next week, for the Bills to hang, 48 on them? That's when I was like, yeah, I don't know if this team can actually win the Super Bowl. That Bills game told me a lot about who the Lions were. And from that point on, I was like, yeah, they're the one seed, but I just feel like some team's going to catch them. I don't know why. I kept thinking they were my Super Bowl pick. You know, I was like, you know, I was kind of starting to feel that hype for my Eagles. Like, this is why I'm saying I'm not biased when it comes to certain things. And I really thought they were going to just overcome the injuries, especially as the playoffs rolled on. And I was like, oh, that's a good sign. But it just never kind of happened. And yesterday was just a culmination. Just, you know, the guys being rusty coming back from injuries, guys kind of you know, just getting out of position, especially defensively. Guys were out of position a lot defensively yesterday. I just think going forward, like Shan said, this was their best kind of window to win it all, because to climb that mountain again, really the whole NFC North. If you look at the whole NFC North, all those teams that are going to try to climb that mountain again, I don't know. They've all got issues now. So that's a big problem with that division. They were good this year, but they all got knocked out pretty much. Just went after another, bang, bang, bang.
Yeah, 0-3.
Yeah, so.
Insane.
it's one thing if just one of those teams would have won a game, then I'd be like, okay, you know, then the NFC North is still competitive, things like that. But then they all just go down and just like dropping like flies. Oh.
It went down like the Titanic.
Oh, Jesus.
Like,
oh, Jesus.
They probably weren't as good as we thought they were. I mean, we did a long time, but the Vikings were not as good as we thought they were. We said that with the Packers. They were okay. They were fun, but they weren't great. And the Lions had too many injuries, and just it was going to be their defense. So those were the issues with them. Now with the Ravens next year, I have more concerns with them trying to climb the hill again, because their division is not going to be hard. It's the AFC North is just going to be that kind of slugfest, that slog that it kind of is until the last couple weeks of the season when these teams emerge from the pack. But the biggest issue I have in Baltimore, it's been the same problems that we've said now for years. Lamar Jackson doesn't show up in the playoffs. He had a better, like, in terms of like strictly yardage wise, he had a better game than most of his playoff performances, but he had two bad turnovers. So, yeah, you can't say he played a good game like a lot of the casuals game.
I'll be really honest. It felt like 20 turnovers, because it felt like they just gave up on Lamar in the second half, as I said before. It felt like those turnovers just ruined the offense's entire confidence. I've never seen that.
Yeah. You know, and those two turnovers were just critical spots in a game. You know, you can't just have a bad, disconnect between you and your receiving target down the field, where there's not within 10 yards of that ball. You basically arm punted. Like, that's awful. And then that fumble really, that fumble, even though there was still time in that game, that fumble to me sealed the game. I was like, I don't see it at this point. I'm like, I can't see it. It's too many mistakes at this point. So I look at Baltimore, and this is why I'm questioning it now. Listen, I love John Harbaugh. I love what he does. I love what he stands for. But at what point do you move on? It's like that entire division needs, besides the fancy, but get scapegoated probably. But that entire division needs to move on from their head coaches, every single one of them. I mean, Stefanski, just because they need to get in the hell out of there, get in the other three need to go now. Tomlin can't win anymore. I don't think Harbaugh can win anymore. I don't think. And obviously, Zach Taylor, guy's a bum. So I don't really. That whole division is just a mess. But it's the same kind of issues. You know, it's Lamar Jackson's turnovers. It's the offensive receiving, you know, with the receiving core, but guys dropping passes, too many fumbles, you know, not on the same page, offensive line down when they need to protect a little bit better. It was just so many of the same issues, you know, that's for Baltimore every single playoff. It feels like for the last, 6 years. So, I don't know where they go next. I think they'll be in a better position coaching wise than the Lions will, but I don't know what that's really going to get them if they can't overcome their just internal issues. And then the Lions, they have enough talent, but when you lose the coaching, just like in Philly, we saw what happened when you lost coaching. You know, you lost coaching last year. Look what happened. That talent's not going to be enough to save the Lions next year if their coaching is going to be bad. So we'll see what happens. These two teams are still very talented, but massive hits this offseason in one way or another.
You know, and I was thinking of this too, before we get Will's thoughts on this. Do you guys remember what happened week one to the Ravens?
Yeah, toe tap.
Toe tap by Isaiah Likely. Yep. And then 20-some weeks later, the dichotomy of football can hit you, pun intended, in the ass, you know, 20 weeks later. Will, what are your thoughts? And welcome in once again. What are your thoughts on what the future of both the Lions and the Ravens look like this offseason?
So for the Ravens, I feel like John Harbaugh, I don't think he's going to lose his job, because I feel like guys like Sean McVay and Kyle Shanahan, I feel like those guys, like John Harbaugh, is going to be irreplaceable. So I feel like they're not going to move on from him. They're going to just try to fix the stuff around him. And I think that's going to be the case for that. And also, you know, I feel like with Lamar, it's always been this thing that, you know, he's always like, you know, he wins the regular season stuff, but then, you know, doesn't do well in the playoffs. Like, he won probably one playoff game, but then wind up choking the other. So lately, it's I know it's another failed season for Baltimore. I think for the Lions, I think just being impartial, because you know how guys feel about the Lions, but you know, it's going to be hard. Like, I kind of agree with you guys. It's going to be hard. I think they're not going to find a guy, because guys like Aaron Glenn, who took that defense was ravaged with injuries and still able to compete, and also Ben Johnson with how creative he is, it's hard to replace. And there's not a lot of coordinators out there that have that type of plays like a Ben Johnson, or defensive schemes like an Aaron Glenn. I feel like I'm more confident in finding the defensive coordinator, the offensive coordinator, because Ben Johnson was just that special. So I think, I feel like with the Lions, that's going to be really the only thing they got to worry about, is the coordinator stuff. They have a bunch of cap space, so they could re-sign some of their players, depending on if they want to resign them or not. And I feel like with Baltimore, I feel like they're the one that's probably going to be that rebuild is going to be more like, had a lot of brainstorming to it, because like, you guys made the necessary things. Y'all guys signed Derrick Henry. He is arguably one of the best running backs, probably the second best running back of the season behind Saquon. And then you've gone out and you try to at least revamp your O-line a little bit. You got some receivers. I know your defense got depleted because of the money, but you guys, you know, signing these guys here and there, and also they got Nate Wiggins. So they got some foundation there. It's just going to be a little bit hard, because a lot of strategic moving for the Ravens, because the Lions, all they have to do is just replace a coordinator, but that's going to be difficult, especially on the offensive coordinator side. But I think both have some issues and stuff, but I feel like, you know, some of them can be changed and be improved, but some is going to be really hard. A lot of brainstorming by the owners and the GMs and so forth. So I think both of them is going to be a little bit challenging in the offseason.
Yeah, and let's start by previewing let's continue by previewing our championship games. Will, you were right on the money with the Commanders. How do you see the Commanders finding a way to kind of do similar things in the fourth quarter as they did even earlier in the year against the Eagles?
I think that one, it's going to be hard, because honestly, the Lions going to scrap with injury, so they was able to do something against that. While the Eagles, man, honestly, though, at first I was like, man, they don't have that many injuries, but man, you look at the injuries that they have, N'Kobe Dean, I believe Quinyon Mitchell might be out for the following game. I'm not sure. Is it Brandon?
At this point, it looks like he's going to play. Yeah, I think Brandon's right. Okay. We'll see.
Okay, so they're only going to miss N'Kobe Dean, so they're not going to be, like, hurt that much like the Lions were with their defense. So I think it's going to be a challenge, and also, obviously, we already know it's defense division rivalry, so they know each other very well. So that's going to be a factor with that one. And I just feel like with Jaden Daniels, it's going to be a tough task, of course, division rivals. And also, I feel like with this defense that they're not going to, you know, let down and, you know, let Jaden Daniels score more times than not. Because I think, I know last time they faced each other, obviously Jalen Hurts got concussed. You know, that offense didn't really go under Kenny Pickett, and Commanders came back and won the game. So I think this is way different, because I think obviously I think Hurts is going to be healthy. And honestly, Hurts really showed in that game with the Rams, though, despite some, you know, questionable play calling McKellen Moore here and there. Jalen Hurts still back to himself, and also he's, you know, Eagles still can do what they have to do. So I think it's going to be tough for Jaden Daniels. He's got to do a lot of things the way he do, like, you know, a lot of maybe screens here and there possibly, and a lot of like quick throws. Honestly, it's going to be hard, because the Eagles defense is no pushover, especially that defensive line. And also, they also took a hit with their guard. His name is Cosmic, right?
Yeah, Sam Cosmic's out. Cosmic. ACL.
Yeah, he's
really
out,
bad. So he, really bad.
Yeah, him and Wiley are one of the best linemen, and I feel like Wiley's not going to really be that of a benefactor to it, because, you know, he's going to guard the right side, but honestly, who's going to guard up the middle? Because you got all those big boys, Sweat, Davis, Jalen Carter, everyone in between. So it's going to be really tough task. So Cliff Kingsbury, he has to figure out some stuff as far as, you know, some schemes to get Jaden Daniels the ball out quicker, because I feel like after losing their all-pro guard, it's going to be a tough task. But and also that defense is a little bit shaky, so it's going to be a tough task, and I'm not sure, but we'll see what happens. But it's going to be a tough task for Jaden Daniels for sure this NFC Championship.
And Brandon, when you look at the Eagles, you know, today it was about the trenches. Some of these things were difficult. Some of these things worked. And at the end of the day, they had the better D-line. They forced the Rams to make more mistakes and get the win. How much do you think that's going to play a factor? Because it seems like the biggest key of the game for Washington and Philly is this idea of who's going to find, you know, the best in the trenches, you know, the O-line and the D-line. That what we saw with the Rams today, it translates perfectly to what we're going to see next week.
Yeah, you know, there's a saying that goes, you know, games are won in the trenches, but the thing is that the truer words never been spoken, especially when it comes to the Eagles, when you have literally still the best offensive line in football, and you've had the best offensive line in football probably for the last, oh my god, 5, 6, 7 years.
Or at least one of the best.
Yeah, yeah. It's up there. It's top 2 or 3 every year, easily.
So, you know, like, it's one of those things that I love about this team, is that when it comes to trench battles, everybody keeps saying, oh, like, whenever it's, especially, you know, for a lot of games. But I kind of just laugh when I tune into Eagles games, obviously, because I'm watching every week. And the commentator's like, oh, you know, this game, like whoever the Eagles are playing, this game's going to really be decided in the trenches. I'm like, well, if it's decided in the trenches, just give the Eagles the win now. Because they have a top 5 D and O line every single year.
But here's the pushback that I'll say, and you can kind of lean on this as well. Today was ugly. It was ugly for you know, both teams in the trenches. Are you if the weather is the same, which more than likely it's going to be very similar, are you concerned about those pieces, at least for the defensive line of Washington?
If it's, I don't think it's going to snow. I think anything, and if it does, it probably will be super light. We're not going to get another. I don't think we're going to get another round of snow like that. I think if anything, it'll probably just be really cold. It'll be a lot colder than what we got. It'll probably be maybe like in the teens, 20s, instead of being like in the low 30s like it was today. But I just think that with how banged up, you know, losing Sam Cosmi is massive. I mean, the Eagles have always, you know, not for nothing, but they even in the loss to the Commanders with Kenny Pickett in there in Washington, they still forced, I believe it was 5 turnovers. They're still you know, one of the best teams at getting takeaways as well, you know, as well as getting pressure on a QB. So I look at it as in this game right now, the run D for Washington, because that is primarily what your trenches are all about, is run defense. Their run D is bottom 3 in the NFL. It's been bottom 5 all season long. If the Eagles pound that rock, especially like they did a lot today, if they pound that rock, I don't think there's a shot in hell Washington wins next week. Because, like, I just can't see how, in better weather, I can't see how the Eagles' O-line will get pushed back again. I mean, a lot of it came today. Both teams were just slipping all over a muddy, snowy field. That's kind of what I chalk it up to. So I just think that, you know, especially and when you know your opponent like both these teams do, you know, everybody's going to expect fireworks because Eagles run offense, you know, between Jalen Hurts and Saquon Barkley is great. And then, of course, Jaden Daniels and being explosive here, you know, everybody's going to expect, oh, you know, maybe a blowout, you know, not blowout, but a high scoring shootout. I'm like, this is not what that is. The Eagles Commanders games are usually ugly. It's the, you know, NFC's games are just usually ugly.
Especially these two, yes, 100%.
Like Eagles Giants usually a blowout. Eagles Cowboys one way or another is a blowout. Eagles Commanders never is. It's always a one possession game. It's always team with the ball last, you know, wins the game. And that's the thing is that, you know, to me, that's where that time possession is going to be so key. And that's the one thing that the Eagles have dominated year after year after year. Time of possession. Today, not so much the case. Today, time of possession, just because so much bad weather really wasn't. Time possession wasn't really a factor today. I mean, it was a factor in giving the Rams the ball back twice in the last 4 minutes, which was disgusting. But
I'll say this too to kind of help you kind of push on here too is the fact that with that time of possession, this sounds crazy for a rookie quarterback, but you don't want Jaden Daniels with the ball late in the fourth quarter. You just don't want that at all.
Yeah. And then on the flip side, if you give Philly the ball back, especially in better conditions than today, you give Philly the ball back late in the fourth quarter. Because today was just an anomaly because of the weather. But 9 times out of 10, you get Philly the ball back late in the fourth quarter, especially if they're leading, game's over. You're not getting the ball back. So it's going to be real interesting. That's what I'm saying. It really comes down to who's going to have that ball last, when kind of which team in the trenches is going to push each other back. Because the key to stopping Jaden Daniels, like everybody's like, oh, well, he can run, he can throw. Yeah, he can do that, but I'd rather have him throw. And because when he's thrown against the Eagles, it hasn't been successful. When he's ran, you know, that's pretty much how he beat us in Washington. And when he couldn't run in the first meeting in Philly, it was ugly throwing the ball. Everything was covered. He wasn't accurate. It was ugly. I just feel like, you know, in much colder weather in Philly this time around, loud game, NFC Championship, Super Bowl ticket on the line. I think he'll play well, but I don't think he's going to put up another, like, 300-plus total yard game for like the third or fourth straight time in a row. I can't see it happening. It's just that this number one defense in the NFL for a reason. Even with when giving up 324 yards to Matt Stafford, they still, you know, still won the game by 6. You know, still only getting, because 22 points in a real kind of crappy, snowy game where your offense couldn't move the ball late. Outside of that last touchdown run by Saquon Barkley, he couldn't really move the ball in that fourth quarter that much. That's pretty impressive to me. Most of Matt Stafford's, like half of Matt Stafford's yards came in the last 2 drives, it feels like. So really, you held him to much less than the 324. But yeah, the trenches will be always the biggest part between these, or play the biggest part between these two teams. It's just because they're both, you know, really good. Jaden Daniels is, you know, the line's going to take a hit with Sam Cosmi out. Philly is healthier at this point outside of N'Kobe Dean, or that's another thing. I got to talk about the unsung hero real quick. Oren Burks had a hell of a game.
Unbelievable.
Today.
Yeah.
Hell of a game.
Unbelievable.
So if he does that again, it's going to feel like N'Kobe Dean wasn't missed at all. If he does that, if he plays exactly like he did today. So we'll see. Trenches are important, but I'll take the Eagles front seven over the Commanders any day of the week. So.
Shane, what do you expect being the keys of this matchup, and how do you see it going down?
Yeah, I think a big part of it is going to be controlling the clock, because, you know, like Brandon said, Washington's run defense is awful. And, you know, when you look at these two teams, you got an amazing run game on one side, which Detroit also had. And, you know, look, everybody's like, oh, well, you know, they blew out Detroit. And yeah, they did, but like, they still allowed 31 points. It wasn't like their defense was playing lights out or something. You know, so I think it's going to be really important for Saquon and company to control the clock that way and keep Jaden Daniels in that offense, which is, that's their strength, is that side of the ball. Keeping them off the field, especially late in the game. you know, if you do that and you limit turnovers, you'll be fine. As for Washington, I think they win it by, you know, I mean, it's going to be a lot tougher for them because, you know, you don't have Sam Cosmi. I mean, he's your best offensive lineman for sure. And he's a guard as well. So, you know, that interior offensive line, which, you know, normally it's not as big as like losing a tackle, but the Eagles have this interior D lineman named Jalen Carter, who's pretty good. So, you know, that's kind of an issue. And, yeah, that's, but I think if you can, especially depending on if Mitchell is back or not, if you can kind of, you know, spread the pass game out a bit, take advantage of them that way, that's going to be big. Not so much in the middle, but more on the outside. So, you know, if you can do that, and then, you know, if you play like a 4-4 defense, just jam the box, you'll have a better chance at slowing the Eagles down. But ultimately, I just think, you know, every year, one of the four teams that's in the conference championship week is like, yeah, they're not as good as the others. You know, it's like, yeah, they kind of not got lucky, but it's a little bit of like a Cinderella story type of thing. And this year it's them. I mean, I'm sorry, but it just is. You know, that you look at the other three teams, they've been top three or four teams all season, and Washington hasn't. They've been, you know, maybe like the sixth or seventh best team throughout the year. So, yeah, and normally 9 times out of 10, that team loses in conference championship week. So, yeah, I just don't see them winning, especially since it's in Philly. And, you know, and I mean, really, they just barely won their second game versus Philly, and that was with Kenny Pickett. So, you know, good luck. But yeah, that's my 2 cents on it.
I know Brandon's taking the Eagles. I'm taking the Eagles as well. Will, are you on the same page?
Yeah. I think it's going to be the Eagles, but I think as long as the Eagles do not hurt themselves and play mistake-free football and also pace the game, like you guys says, with controlling the clock, I think they will beat the Commanders. That's how really the Lions lost, because they really turned over the ball most of the time, and they didn't control the clock like they did and keep on making that fast-paced offense while the Commanders just basically control the time and possession. So I think as long as, you know, that's the Eagles mostly get the upper hand with the time of possession and also less turnover and make mistake-free football, I think they can somehow pull it off. But that's usually the main game. Basically, mistake-free football, less turnovers, less mistakes, and time of possession. So those are key things.
And there hasn't been a team in the NFL that has turned the ball over less in the last, what, 15 weeks?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, so it helped.
All right, yep. So for this Bills-Chiefs matchup, I'm going to do a roundtable challenge for this. Because, you know, in this matchup is always crazy. It always goes different than we expect. You know, you never really can predict how these two teams play against each other. It really is one of the best games every time, you know, in the NFL every year. So let's make this a challenge, because in the history of this matchup, for as long as Mahomes and Allen have been in their QB1 positions, when we look at these two teams right now going into next Sunday, give me one thing that feels similar to every matchup they had before and one thing that feels different to every matchup they had before. Shane, I'll start with you.
Ooh, well, similar. I mean, other than the
other than the obvious
one, the quarterbacks.
Yeah, other than the obvious stuff, we're going deep dive here.
Yeah. Oh boy. Similar. I would say. I mean, in terms of, well, I'll start with the Chiefs. It feels similar for them in the fact that, you know, this is a team that they feel like no matter what happens, they still feel like you can never count them out. Like, they just always have a chance at winning, even if they're down by like 3 touchdowns or something. And what's different, though, is how they, even more so than last year, are not at all a, you know, like a fireworks show, a really pass-heavy kind of offense. They play very, you know, kind of like Patriots dynasty type football. Power running, tough defense, and, you know, maybe 150 yards in the air. Nothing too fancy, but it gets the job done. And for the Bills, I think, you know, they also, what's different for them is that, you know, I feel like they also kind of have that going for them where, you know, they don't feel as big and explosive as they normally have been. And, you know, in that same way, which is not necessarily a bad thing for them. Just feels more balanced, I guess, as far as their approach, certainly on offense. And what's the same? Well, I mean, I would say, I'd say the same as ultimately, you know, even though they have this more balanced approach, it still is like, you know, that Josh Allen can just turn it on at any moment and turn into Superman. Not that you want him to be, but, but, you know, we still see that from time to time. So that's probably what I would say. There's a couple other things, but I'll let everyone else talk about it.
Will, go ahead. What's one thing that's similar from the histories of this matchup and one thing that feels massively different this time around?
I feel like with this one, I feel like Mahomes and Josh Allen, I feel like they're more on a, well, I feel like they're sort of on a similar playing field, but I feel like Josh Allen is a bit better than Mahomes. Though Mahomes is still the best quarterback right now in the league, I just feel like for the season, I feel like Josh Allen is a bit above Mahomes as far as how he plays. And I feel like basically the Bills are, I feel like they're more functional offense. Though the Chiefs have, you know, some good offense here and there, some good, you know, passing game, and the runs is okay, like here and there. But I feel like the Bills have a much better offense edge than the Chiefs, but usually the Chiefs in previous matchups, maybe besides last year in some way, though, you know, Bills did have their problems last year, but they have, like, better, like, weapons than the Chiefs. So I feel like this year is a bit, the Bills have more better offense than the Chiefs this time around. Even before, I feel like the Chiefs always had the better offensive as far as quality players go. Though they have some similar, like, as far as firepower, but I always get the edge to the Chiefs most of the time because in the past, they would have either a Tyreek Hill or they still have, you know, Travis Kelce, and they have those weapons, and they had an O-line here and there. So I feel like this time around, the Bills feel like more of the favorites, and I feel like the Chiefs is a bit more of the underdog just because a lot of people probably have the Bills because Josh Allen's right now is having an MVP-like caliber season. So that's why I feel like it's the most similar, just because of how Josh Allen's playing and how he's right now arguably maybe the MVP, but arguably one of the favorites to MVP and one of the best players during our season than Mahomes.
Brandon, what do you think is one thing that's similar and one thing that's different?
For me, what stands out immediately is the Chiefs' defense. Defensively, they're still the same team they've always been. They're going to play just damn near lights-out football. They're not going to get up a ton of points. They're going to bring pressure. Chris Jones is still going to disrupt the game. Their corners, we thought losing Legarius Sneed was going to, you know, kind of, you know, make them take a step back, and it didn't. I think defensively that's, you know, to me that's very similar. But I also think a similarity on the Bills side before I get into kind of differences, a similarity on the Bills side is they still don't use James Cook enough, and I think that's a problem. I just think in this game you've got to use him more than what you're doing. You can't, and if you're not going to use him as a runner, you got to kind of use him in the screen game or the quick dump off kind of passing game more. You can't just use him 15 to 17 times a game as a runner and then just let Josh Allen throw the ball, you know, 30 plus times. That's definitely something I think that's similar that it probably needs to change if they're going to beat the Chiefs defensively this time around. I think I'm kind of on the same page as Will. Like, this just feels like for the first time Josh Allen is the better quarterback than Mahomes in this matchup. It just feels like that this is his time to finally dethrone him. You know, this is Josh Allen's chance. I just think that just this year he just seems like he's playing with more purpose now more than ever. It seems like he's just a man on a mission every time that ball is snapped. And on the flip side, it's a quarterback thing again. Just Mahomes has too many turnovers. He's played well enough the last couple times out, But, you know, I don't think he can we need to see, like, you know, I feel like in this game we're going to have to see, especially with how many points the Bills can score in a hurry, or just how many points they can score with Josh Allen at the helm because he's so explosive this time around. It feels like Mahomes can't just sit back and go for 150 or 175 yards passing. It feels like he's going to have to go somewhere around 250 with a couple touchdowns to beat him. I can't see him just sitting back like he did against the Texans and kind of just, you know, dumping it off to Kelce every chance he gets. That's another thing. Like, you know, if you take away Travis Kelce's yards, Mahomes only threw for 70 yards the entire game. And Travis Kelce was wide open on every single time. Like, every single time he found him the ball, it was wide open. I could have made that throw. So, it wasn't anything special. So, I feel like, you know, and I think, like, what we've all said so far, you know, they feel very similar, but when you kind of dig into it, they are pretty different, it feels like, this time around. I feel like that's going to be a big advantage to the Bills because the Bills to me just feel like that's the team of destiny right now. So, at least in the AFC. In the NFC, before they got knocked out, it was Detroit, but in the AFC for sure, I just feel like all season long, the Bills were the team of destiny. I feel like that's going to finally show up, you know, next weekend.
All right, what are your guys' picks? What do you guys have? I can start.
This is very tough.
Yeah, if Josh wants to jump in, he can give his picks too.
Yeah, Josh, I was gonna get you our last word here because I wanted to ask you some of the things that we talked about earlier. But for me, this is the Chiefs, and it's not here's the thing: it's not about the history of the matchup. It's not about. It feels like it's not even about anything, because we talk about this team just feeling like no matter what, like they're going to find a way to win. And I think this is a 3-point game. I think this is still another classic. I just can't doubt it. And again, this is not an analysis based thing. When we talk about the Chiefs all year, and Brandon, Shane, Will, you guys know this, we always sit there with this caveat of like, we want to negate them here, 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 right? We want to do that. But we can't, because we know they're going to be in this spot, and undoubtedly they are. So that's how I feel about it. Who would like to go next on that?
I think if history tells us anything, it's that, you know, it'll be Kansas City.
Yeah.
Because they've won it every time, and they're at home, so they have every advantage when it comes to that. But you know, I think the Chiefs, even though they're 15-2, I think they've gotten really lucky in a lot of games. I can think of, you know, 5-6 games off the top of my head that they probably shouldn't have won. Whereas, you know, Buffalo, I feel like they haven't just like beat the brakes off somebody like Buffalo has done many times throughout this year. And I think they can win in more ways, Buffalo. Like Will was saying, obviously Mahomes is better all time, but this season Allen is by far better. And you know, I think even if James Cook, if they don't use him a lot, they have a better run game than Kansas City. And you know, I think really the two advantages that Kansas City has as far as like personnel and whatnot is the secondary and the defense in general, but like, I feel like their front sevens, I think Buffalo's front seven can hang with theirs. But Kansas City secondary is easily better. It's not even close. And then coaching. Yeah, I mean, Andy Reid and Steve Spagnuolo, it's pretty hard to top that. you know, I mean, Andy is about as good of an offensive mind as there is, and Spags is about as good of a defensive coordinator you can get. So, yeah, so that's, you know, that's definitely a disadvantage for them. But I just, overall this season, I like what we see in Buffalo. So I think I'm going to take them by like a field goal, but I'm not confident in that at all.
Yeah. Will, what about you?
Well, I think this is going to be one that I feel like it's going to come down to coaching and who wants it more. I know both teams want it more. I know Josh Allen, I know he showed versus the Ravens, he wants this a lot. And obviously the Chiefs also wants it too. They want the three-peat. So I feel like, man, it's going to be tough because, like I said, it's going to come down to coaching. It's going to come down to decision-making, and it's come down to who can separate from the pack even further. Because I feel like with these Chiefs games, it's always the case. Like, you could try and score, but you got to keep scoring because Mahomes going to always find a way to make this a game or squeak this out a win. And you have to be on your toes every single possession. I feel like even one single possession, either go for a field goal or you miss opportunity to score, go for six, you're going to probably make this a nail-biting game and have Mahomes win this game. So, because the Chiefs, even the regular season, they showed that they could do it. It just have to always, the postseason is the biggest Achilles heel to the Bills, is facing the Chiefs. And they have to show what they did in the regular season in the playoffs in this big time AFC championship to get them back to get the Bills back to Super Bowl that they haven't been in since, you know, they gone that four times they went to the Super Bowl. So it's gonna be a tough one, but man, I have to go with the Chiefs just because I just gonna feel like it's going to be the type of games that the Chiefs are going to find a way, and they're going to find a way either by a field goal, either by Mahomes using Mahomes magic and this defense, you know, basically being the bend don't break defense. It's not the same defense that they had when the Chiefs offense was downright awful, that they can't catch nothing. Not that type of defense. Like, that defense is like bend but don't break type of defense. So I just feel like the Chiefs are going to find a way to win this. But, man, this is going to be sort of a close decision because it's hard to say who's going to win this just because. But I just feel like the Chiefs are going to eke it out a little bit just because I feel like because of previous history and we know how the Chiefs are in these type of situations.
Brandon, your pick here.
See, my head says Kansas City, but my heart just tells me Buffalo, and I'm kind of like Shane. I just feel like this is kind of going to come down to a field goal, and it's like I'm not even confident in that. It's like I just feel like it's just going to come down to because I just look at this Chiefs team. Yeah, you can't count them out. We said it all year. But I'm like, there's no way Mahomes can make a Super Bowl just throwing for less than 200 yards, can he? Like, it's you know, that's why I'm struggling. Like, if this was any other year, I would pick the Chiefs again. But something tells me that this is just Buffalo's year to finally break the curse, to you know, for Josh Allen to cement why people had him as the front runner for MVP. For a good chunk, for the majority of the season, it just feels like that's what's going to happen to me. I just feel like Josh Allen's just not going to, you know, roll over like he had, like the Bills have in previous matchups with them. I feel like, though, if you're going to beat Kansas City, you have to know where Big 87 is at all times. I don't get how this far into his career, knowing that, well, A, he's not fast, and B, you know, like, it's been so many years of this already. But the fact that teams keep losing Travis Kelce in coverage is beyond me. I don't understand how it keeps happening. And I almost feel like that's the only way the Bills can lose this game, is if they lose Travis Kelce in coverage again, then you're going to lose to the Chiefs no matter what Mahomes throws for. But if you can cover him for, because you're not going to stop him completely, but if you can contain him just enough, then you should fare well. The only thing is, you're in Kansas City, so you're not home. But the thing is, if Kansas City is cold for that game, which it probably will be, it's no different than what you've played in Buffalo. So, and it's also, it's them and Buffalo are two rowdy fan bases and two loud fan bases. So it's not, and, you know, like I said, they've played each other they've played each other 1,000 times already. So this is nothing that either team isn't used to. So I don't think the crowd's going to be much of a factor. I don't think the weather's going to be much of a factor. I think this just comes down to who wants it more. And I think right now, from where I'm sitting, I just think Buffalo seems to want this more. So my head says the Chiefs, but my heart is saying Buffalo. So I'll take Buffalo, but it's not like I'm confident in it.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. Our man Josh, our TCA president, welcome in. You get our last word, my friend. Tell me what you think of both of these matchups, man, because it's definitely very interesting. Give us your full analysis. You have the floor, my friend.
Good evening, gentlemen. How are we doing tonight?
Good.
Not bad. Yourself?
Good. I guess we'll start with this Chiefs-Bills game. I feel like you guys left out one major factor. It's tough to beat a team that has 12 guys on the field at all times with guys with the yellow flag in their
eyes. Yeah, no, that is very true. That is very true. It has been rough.
I mean, we were talking about this before. It's starting to get to Patrick Mahomes is starting to be like the LeBron James of football, where he's flopping all over the place, and it's disgusting to watch, really.
Come on, bro. Come on.
It is bad.
Did I touch a nerve with the LeBron thing?
Nope, I love it.
Yeah, well, of course.
You touched a nerve with me too, but I get it. I get where your head's at.
No, you're right. You know, say it again.
That's a whole other discussion.
We don't have the time or the budget for it today. We're okay.
I'm not. Listen, bottom line is, I'm not calling LeBron the GOAT. Good night.
Yeah, I'm calling the GOAT.
I'm doing that, but we're not gonna have a conversation tonight. Josh comes in here and immediately stirs the pot.
It's obviously Iguodala, guys.
Oh, Jesus.
You would say KD.
Oh my God! All right, Josh, continue, because I think this is important, right? The flags, the unnecessary penalties. I mean, by the letter of the law, you know, particularly in that Texans game, they made the right calls by the letter of the law. But there's a difference between letter of the law and actually getting the call right, and that's been a huge issue.
And to me, it's not even just about that. It's about, you know what, if you're going to call it that way, call it both ways. Don't just call it one way. Call it both ways. Because there's no reason for it to be one-sided like that all the time. It's pretty obvious. It feels like they just keep throwing it in our face every week.
Yeah, it's absolutely, I think that's insane. Really true. Yeah.
So, I mean, if you ask me, I feel like the Bills have the better team. Like, you know, like you guys stated, they beat up on teams this year. Josh Allen, MVP, Mahomes not as good. You know, so then you throw that as, that's like a Brady thing. Brady was never really the best, you know, stat-wise. It's kind of the same with Mahomes. He just wins. Definitely comes down to the coaching also, like you guys also stated. Andy Reid is a G. He's a G.
I know it.
So, I mean, to me, it's And I'm a Jet fan, so I don't want to see Buffalo win, but I don't think they are going to win. I think the Chiefs win, and it's going to be a close one, like it always is. They're kind of like the, Minnesota Vikings of the year, that year that they lost to the Giants, but they're just a better team because they have better players and better coaching.
On the other side, with the Lions and the Commanders, do you feel the Commanders have a realistic shot?
Bro, Lions Commanders. What game are we talking about?
Well, not Lions Commanders. Jesus, it felt like it. No, well, not with that. The Eagles and the Commanders. Jesus.
Yeah, I do think the Commanders could beat the Eagles. I don't know. To me, the passing game just doesn't look like it's right now for me with the Eagles. And it's been all season, it's going to be on the back of Saquon, and he's shown that he could do it all year. He's done it all year. If Philly continues that, they'll definitely win the game. And if Washington is going to win the game, it would take a miracle from Jaden Daniels to continue to do what he's been doing this season, which is just completely impressive.
So you're taking the Eagles as well?
Yeah, I got to take the Eagles.
Mm-hmm.
I do think Washington could definitely win the game. No problem.
And then the other piece that we talked about, where do you see the Lions and the Ravens going this offseason? I mean, where do you think they kind of frame themselves in 2025 in this offseason? Like, where does your head spin on those two teams moving forward?
Well, the Lions, I don't think they don't have to do too much because they lost two of their best players, to injury, and that's nothing that you could really control. And Hutchinson and Montgomery was out. You know, you lost your dual-headed back, and Jared Goff needs to definitely play better, that's for sure. We've seen him perform in the playoffs. You know, he's gotten to the Super Bowl. They're a good team. I don't think Jared Goff is as bad as he showed, you know, in that game. But he's not that great. You know, he's a game manager. I don't think they need to do too much for the Lions. And, man, the Ravens. Always right there at their fingertips. And they always find a way to fumble it. The question is it? It's kind of like the same question we're starting to say with the Steelers. Is it time to just make a coaching change just to make a change, just to try to switch it up? They have a good team. Yeah, they could use another number one receiver. You assume Zay Flowers and now Bateman. They showed this year that they could be a pretty good 1-2 punch. It's tough. They definitely need a better defense, so they need to step that up somehow, some way. But they don't really need to change too much. To me, if you're in it, you always have a chance. And they have the players and the skills and the skill players to make it happen, both teams. Sometimes shit just does not go your way.
Yeah, it felt that way for the last 5 or 6 years as well with the Ravens. Our last football conversation of the night is the national championship. Ohio State, Notre Dame tomorrow night. Josh, how do you see that going down, and what's been your overall impression of the 12-team college football playoff?
Well, no matter how you look at it, they're going to find a way to mess up, you know, who they put in the playoff. It's just, it's not based off of record or anything. It's record and people's opinions on how they're beat up, you know, how teams are beating up on other teams and ranking and blah, blah, blah. They always find a way to mess it up. There's always someone that's not going to be happy about something of a reason why that this team was in and this team was out. I enjoyed it. I don't think they should expand it any more than the 12. I just feel like they could and should just have a better way of deciding on what teams are going to be in there rather than, you know, have some set standards, not just, oh, this team. I don't know. I couldn't even tell you. It's so many different things that could be done. Excuse me. But it definitely could be better chosen just to be more consistent. And for the national championship game, I would like to see Notre Dame win. but I think Ohio State is going to take it.
Shane, how do you think that matchup is going to fare? I mean, we've talked about our issues with the playoff before, but I mean, how do you feel this matchup's going to go down?
Yeah, I'm with Josh. I mean, obviously, I would like to see Notre Dame win, but I don't see that happening. you never know, though. Anything's possible, but yeah, I just think Ohio State is much more well-rounded, better coached, you know, and they just have more playmakers that can get it done, which is, I mean, you know, they struggled a bit against Texas, but, you know, for the most part, the playmakers, that is, but for the most part, I mean, they've kind of been lights out with, you know, playing pretty much everybody. So, yeah, I just think Ohio State's just on another plane.
Brandon, do you feel the same way?
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking about. Pretty much once these two teams were set to play each other, I was like, man, Ohio State just has don't do that to me. Don't play the duck sound.
Oh no! Quack. Oh no! Quack!
Quack! Quack!
Oh man!
Oh no!
I mean, listen, that's one of the problems I have with the CFP is
you shouldn't have 3.5 weeks off. To me, that's ridiculous. But it's, I look at these two teams the second you know, they're semifinals, but a final, and we got the matchup. The first thing I thought of was pretty much the same thing as everyone else is kind of thinking. It's just their offense, Ohio State's offense is just too, I think it's going to be too much for Notre Dame. And I think that, you know, they've got a, you know, decent defense, you know, a really good defense. Ohio State has just, I mean, they've also been here before. Not this exact group of students, but this school has been here and been in these situations a lot more over you know, recent history than the Irish have. So I can't see how, I mean, like Notre Dame can't just sit back and call QB draws with Riley Leonard all game and expect that to work. That's not going to work against Ohio State. You need to do something different. And Riley Leonard, he still has yet to prove that he can really throw to win a game. So I think that's going to be a problem. I mean, can he do it? You know, any QB can do it. Then, you know, any given Sunday, well, in the case of college Saturday, but it's just, if Riley Leonard gets his legs taken away, if they just call one too many QB draws, which they've really been doing, then I can't see. I don't know how they would even keep the game competitive. I mean, defensively they could, but I don't know who's going to cover Jeremiah Smith. I don't think anybody can at this point. It just seems to me like it's going to be too much. Like the only way. And here's the thing, if Notre Dame throws, I mean, Ohio State's corners are very sticky. They do commit penalties, though, so maybe you can bait them into a few penalties and get some good field position and kind of make those QB draws and shorter plays worth it. But it's a big ask. So I just think Ohio State, as much as I want Notre Dame to win, I want the Fighting Irish to you know, do what their name says and fight and put up a good showing, but part of me is like this. I don't know if they keep it close. I feel like this is going to end up being like a 3-score kind of game. I just feel like Ohio State's going to pull away, probably not early, but probably late. And I can't bet it all against Ohio State at this point. Ohio State, that since they took the first loss to Oregon, and really since they and then that the loss to Michigan really pissed them off. Like those two Big Ten losses, I feel like at both those points, it just the switch kind of flipped in their head, and they've just become the team that people thought they were, they should be. So yeah, I'm thinking it's going to be Ohio State. I mean, Notre Dame is like the feel good story, but I don't know how you're going to get Riley Leonard to really throw the ball to win. And I don't get how you're going to get it. You just don't have enough playmakers to match Ohio State. So I think the Buckeyes take it.
Will, what's your thought on the national title game?
Yeah, I think, obviously, I feel like Ohio State's going to win this. They feel like they are the best team of the Big Ten, and I feel like this one is a great opening for them to win the national championship. And I feel like this could really wash that taste out of mouth to lose to Michigan, because they always struggle with Michigan. And now they, in the national championship, they're versus Northern Dame. And Northern Dame is always, they're always a good, you know, feel good story, because we haven't seen Northern Dame in this position, I think, since my Alabama whooped them. I think it was like 2 decades ago, Roll Tide. Mm-hmm. And I feel like with this one, they're going to probably make it interesting. But, man, just Ohio State has got too much weapons. Their program arguably is one of the best programs in NCAA football right now. And I feel like this is obviously going to be basically might be a one-sided beatdown. But we'll see. But honestly, this is something Ohio State has to win, because I feel like this is an opening for Ryan Day to be one of those premier coaches, or to be one of those top tier coaches, to be like, hey, I got a national championship with one of these big organizations, and this guy always been struggling in the past, and this is a perfect time for him to beat those narratives and win the big one.
For me, it's more of, for me, the CFP era just as a whole has made me kind of upset as just a pure football fan. Because I just don't think the quality of these games are very good at all. I genuinely am trying. I mean, we've talked about some of the pieces as to why, but it's just not good football to me. I don't think this year was a good representation of what the 12-team playoff could be, which I think is also part of why we kind of got this matchup. It's a little weird thinking about the kind of losses that these two teams had, to think that they would be in this position is pretty wild. Two things stick out for me, right? Ryan Day, of course, you know, thinking he was possibly going to get fired if they didn't do anything in the CFP to most likely, I would argue as well, winning the national title. And then Marcus Freeman, who I think is in the right position, regardless of this game, to make a jump to the NFL. And I think that should be the case no matter what happens. But for these two coaches, it's a monumental situation. Just based on, you know, as you guys talking about the rosters and Riley Leonard and how limited he's been and all these different things. It changes the trajectory for these coaches in a very, very interesting way, considering, you know, first year in the 12-team playoff and we get this type of matchup. It's really fascinating. But yes, I think Ohio State is better. As much as I would hope, I think Notre Dame would win, considering just how I feel about Ryan Day as head coach and kind of what a mess it's been, particularly against Michigan. I do see Ohio State getting this one as well. It was Brandon's pick for the movie. It was Rescue Dawn. Brandon, you had a lot of Rescue Dawn for 2006. Brandon, a lot of your initial kind of breakdown of the movies to us was you wanted to do a Christian Bale movie. Talk about that emphasis and why this ended up being your choice for your pick this season.
Yeah, I mean, when I was going through my list of movies initially, like the 5 or 6 I had in mind, I kept looking at the 2 Christian Bale movies on the list, and I was like, you know, everybody knows him for Batman, but people, when you do a deep dive into everything he's done, he's one of the best actors of the last 25 years, and that's not even a question. I mean, everything he touches is just a work of art to me. So I love anything that he does. So
you know, it was kind of easy to pick this movie because, you know, looking at also having American Psycho on the list, everybody, you know, I feel like American Psycho has been done so much, just talked about just on in general, just in the last 25 years, you know, on other pods, other movie sites, whatever it is, whatever you want to call it. I feel like if we would have done it, I've seen it already also. So it's just, I was like, you know what? I've never heard of Rescue Dawn. I didn't even know, you know, that was one of the things he doesn't talk about. But it was one of the things that he did before Batman, or right after Batman, Batman Begins. So I just wanted to try something different. I know we kind of had done our war movies in the past, and this is kind of another war movie, but it's slightly different. It's more of a survival movie than anything else. It's not really a war movie. You know, I treat this movie very similar to kind of like The Revenant in a way. Just how gruesome it is, how hard it is to survive when it's like against all odds, pretty much at that point. I really, you know, I never heard about it before. Like, it was a box office flop, so obviously it wasn't promoted that well, really, at all. But yeah, it had great reviews on Rotten Tomatoes, great tomato meter, like, you know, great fan, you know, audience score. So I was like, well, it's kind of like how the hell did this movie fail? Like what was not, I guess it wasn't marketable because of it being a war movie, you know, a Vietnam War movie, I guess. But I just was like, you know what, let's do something different for a change. Not different in terms of the subject matter, but different in terms of a different kind of Christian Bale movie than what people are used to. So, and he's just, like I say, he's one of my favorite actors. I think he's one of the best actors of the last, you know, 25 years. So I was like, let's do something like that. So I, and the Vietnam War is something that people don't really seem to realize, like, you know, this movie, I think, does a really good job of really kind of getting into how gritty it was. Cause a lot, you know, people know how bad the Vietnam War was for both sides, and how, and the kind of the stalemate that ensued, and, you know, kind of just massacres on both sides. You know, the U.S. being involved in a war they shouldn't have been. But I look at that and I look at this movie and I'm like, this movie really gets gritty. You know, but the one thing that really, I think, set this apart from a lot of war movies that we've seen, every war movie feels like it's kind of shot in a very similar way. This movie had a lot of different kind of unique camera angles to them, like that you wouldn't see in a movie like this. Like, you know, the way a certain shot was portrayed on the screen, you know, some shaky camera work here and there that kind of gave it a real life kind of gritty feel. You know, different kinds of, you know, cuts I thought were unique to this kind of genre. So I was like, okay, this is kind of a slightly different kind of war movie. Interesting. So, you know, it's crazy because it's really just a Christian Bale kind of, it's not a solo movie, but it damn near is, which is also different because every movie he's done, you know, it's always him, and he's a lot of good supporting cast. And I mean, really the only real supporting cast that he has in this movie is Steve Zahn, who's a great actor in his own right. But I really think that when it comes to a movie like this, that in order to tell such a gritty story about, you know, that kind of war and just really the background behind it, kind of the context behind it, and how real it was to be a prisoner of war at that time, I feel like you have to get a good actor that's good at expressing, you know, different kinds of, like, you know, terror, you know, kind of sarcasm. You know, like the one thing I like about Christian Bale a lot is the fact that he's able to just, his facial expressions are really good. And I like that Christian Bale is always, it's crazy how Christian Bale is, he's Welsh,
but yet every movie he does, he's American.
American slash German in this one, which was also interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's so weird because it's like if you were to just watch Christian Bale movies and never hear him actually speak, you would never know that he's not American. But
yeah, I was shocked when I heard him in an interview.
Yeah.
They were like, "Are you here with Christian Bale?" And he's like, "Oh, how you doing there, sweetheart?" And I was like, "What the hell?
Who the hell are you?" Because like every movie he's done, he gives off that typical like just kind of cool guy, just American, like regular American. Like the thing is, it doesn't sound like a forced American accent. It sounds like it's who he is. It's so weird.
Very natural, yeah.
Yeah.
The other guy like that is Gary Oldman.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it's funny. There you go. Bring up Batman again. But I mean, it's it, you know, but that's what I'm saying. You know, this movie just feels like it, that this is perfect because this is like a real, this is very Christian Bale driven. Like other movies that he's been in, it's like, yeah, it's, you know, he's done movies where it's only focused on just one guy going throughout his day or days or whatever it is, but there's still kind of a story behind it. There's a sort of supporting cast. This literally just feels like a Christian Bale survival movie. And to me, I like, this was a movie that, like, I remember Rob, you were saying that it was a slow burn, right? And I was like,
yeah, it is for me. It really felt that way.
Like, but you know what though? Like, after the first like half hour of getting past, you know, kind of like the more kind of just funny secret mission exposition, hey, you're gonna fly over the border here, and they're like setting up of where he's gonna end up, like, but really from the moment that he kind of, not like, because he gets caught, you know, fairly early into the movie, but you know, that's one of the things where the second he kind of gets caught, the movie really for me takes off at that moment. It doesn't really, like, I understand it being slow, but I feel like the second he gets captured, it's when he gets put into basically the quote unquote like little shack with all the other U.S. prisoners of war.
Yeah,
all the, that's where I feel like that's where the movie takes off.
The thing for me, and this is kind of the biggest thought I have on the movie just as a whole, is it's slow, but it's intentional. Like it is incredibly intentional. And you mentioned the camera work too, like the shaky camera work is intentional. Like this movie, everything that it does is very intentional. So even if it doesn't make sense necessarily from just a standard of how films should be made, or, you know, because it really isn't. Like, I don't think this is a movie that isn't, like, it doesn't feel like a way of kind of a modern movie is made. But yeah, again,
I want to talk more about that.
Yeah, but I think that is extremely intentional, and that's why I like the movie, is because I think those things are intentional.
And you know what it is too, just the like intentional and also intense. Like,
yes.
It's you know, this is a movie where it was like, I usually get bored by movies because when it's a slow burn, it's usually like nothing's happening, but there's so much tension and intensity even when nothing is really happening that it keeps this movie moving for me. So it's one of those things where I wasn't bored by it despite not much going on. I couldn't look away from it because I'm like, every moment seemed like, oh, are they gonna get like beaten up here? Or are they gonna get, make a noise too loud and gonna get shot at by the Vietnamese? Like, it was kind of things where I'm like, you know, one bad thing at this very moment, and this whole movie can just go in a whole completely different direction, or their whole livelihoods could be just gone. So, to me, that tension and intensity, and also just the looks that Christian Bale just gives out the whole movie, just like kind of like, a lot of his wide-eyed looks, a lot of, like, you know, intense stares. Like, I feel like that sells, you know, when an actor is able to kind of just pull off, when you can see in his eyes the intensity, not just as an actor, but just you can feel that he's kind of feeling the heat of that moment. That really, to me, sets a slow burn movie apart from a movie that's just intense, like not slow in the traditional way we think it's slow, like slow and boring. This is slow but intense, and it, you know, so it's very purposeful. So it's one of those things where before I give you guys the rest of the time on it, and because we'll all give our ratings at the end of it. The one knock I do have on it though is that I feel like between the first like 10 minutes of the movie and the last like 10, 15 minutes, where it's straight up just like the characters just to me seem unimportant, like Spook and the rest of his flight partners and things like that, his crew. Those characters just seem unimportant. They don't serve a purpose in this movie. I kind of wish they would. Yeah, like I just feel like they wouldn't. Like I feel like they just really didn't like. You know, like once Christian Bale goes down and you last hear from Spook, and you know basically saying like, at that point the comms go off, you don't hear anymore. They all kind of, it's like, I wish at some point, maybe, I mean, I guess it wouldn't have made sense, but I kind of wish at some point maybe you kind of just reference them again throughout the movie somewhere in the middle. Like, it feels like once the crash happened, you just don't see them for like the 99% of the movie after that. I'm like, okay, but you just saw your buddy for the most part go down in a field and you don't kind
of... He's alive.
Yeah, and like, so I was like, we're not going to get any opinion on how you guys feel about that. Like, it's just, oh, we're going to go just directly to Christian Bale and how he survives this. Like, it kind of felt a little weird to me how they kind of just had maybe like 20 minutes of screen time in total. And, or probably even less than that.
Much less.
So it just felt like, it just felt like they were just kind of like useless characters. So that's kind of the one knock I have on it. But I still think the movie is great, but I'll save my rating for the end. I'll let you guys go on it.
Will, were you able to watch this before we started or no?
I did watch the movie.
All right, I'll let you go. What were your thoughts?
I thought it was... Man, honestly, I think this movie was a bit forgetful as far as movies and Christian Bale's like Hall of Fame type career, just because it gets overshadowed with obviously American Psycho and the Dark Knight trilogy. So it's hard to really see this and say this is one of Christian Bale's best, but honestly it was a pretty, you know, standard, you know, almost, you know, connect to real life, you know, events obviously during the Vietnam War. And I thought this was, Christian Bale did pretty good. And I think that obviously I feel like it would have been better if there was at least, like what Brandon says, the crew people there, and then also maybe more, I guess, more of the, as far as the attackness of the movie, at least be more of, I guess, sort of a challenge as far as they're escaping. So I feel like that was something I was thinking about, but I think this was, you know, some of this is a sort of a good type of like movie. Honestly, I feel like movies that trump this, obviously I feel like Rambo is more of that type of movie that obviously it's more has that type of feel, but I feel like Rambo has sort of been that sort of movie that's about survival and, you know, fending off the enemy lines. And I feel like this one is a bit of a good one, but it has its downs. And like obviously what Brandon says, it has its, you know, slow burns to get where it's trying to get. But obviously it's a decent movie, honestly. And it's and I'm glad, you know, at the end he's able to survive and they went back. But I just feel like this is the type of movie that, like I said in the beginning, like, is not something you would think of a Christian Bale movie. It's like, oh, Don Ryan is like, basically, I'm not think that's going to be a movie that they will think about, but it's a good movie nonetheless. But good pick, Brandon.
Yeah. Josh, I don't know if you're able to, if you've ever seen this, but I would love your take on just Christian Bale as an actor, just as a whole.
I have not seen the movie. But you guys seem to love Christian Bale. I think he's a good actor. I guess for me, I'm just more of an old school guy, but he's a good actor.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. Shane, talk about just the cinematography pieces, but also I think it's important to lay out some of the historical inaccuracies of this film, because it is pretty historically inaccurate from what I read, but you can say a piece on that.
Yeah, it's... it's, I mean, it is and it isn't. It's, well, first of all, it's based on a true story. So it has that much going for it, but as we know, based on a true story doesn't always mean anything. but I want to start, I mean, yeah, as far as Brandon, I'm glad you brought this up with, you know, how it's shot, because a lot of times war movies, we see, you know, I mean, I'll just relate it to like, 1917, which is what we watched last year, where it's, you know, there's lots of motion with the camera, but it's oftentimes very stable, and it's, you know, lots of very wide shots so that you can really just take in the scope of what's happening. And, you know, I do think that's typically the best approach for a war movie. However, this one, you know, cinematography wise, it kind of reminds me of The Hurt Locker in a way, where it's very, you know, it's in much closer. It's a lot of handheld, and you can tell, you know, it almost feels like a documentary type of style.
Yeah, that's all I was getting at. I couldn't find the word for it.
Yeah, that's okay. That's what I'm for. I'm kidding. But yeah, so I really appreciated that. Yeah, I mean, as far as, you know, the history, I mean, you know, the Vietnam War was very, it was a brutal war. I mean, not that every war is, but obviously, but Vietnam especially was just extremely dirty. And I mean, the things that North Vietnam did to South Vietnam and to the U.S. and vice versa to an extent, but especially the North to the South were just insane. I mean, there were times where some Viet Cong soldiers, which is the North, where they would make these large piles of human feces from their camps and their platoons, and they would take prisoners of war and literally bury them in these fields of their shit. Like alive, bury them alive. You know, and aside, I mean, you see that in this movie. I mean, not that, but you see in this movie just how brutal it was, how awful they were treated. It's, you know, and I mean, in general, it's just most wars, at least that the U.S. has been involved in, you know, it's either in Europe or, you know, Japan or, you know, like Mexico or even here at home, like at the Civil War or whatever else. And it's, you know, it's landscapes that are, you know, mostly like forests, desert of the Middle East, of course, that conflict for the last 20 some years. You know, forests, deserts, you know, Europe, just like big open grass fields. But Vietnam was kind of unique because it's really one of the only ones where it was more of a kind of a tropical setting. And, you know, that creates all sorts of, I guess, not issues, but it's just different. I mean, most Americans aren't used to that kind of heat, the humidity. You know, there's a lot more places for people to hide, as we saw in this movie. And, you know, much greater potential for sneak attacks and whatnot. You know, I think this movie really demonstrates that quite well. Just how, you know, how scary this war was. And especially, you know, for a lot of Americans, I mean, there was, even beyond just the brutality of it, it was, you know, a lot of people who went and fought for the U.S. didn't even want to be there because they were drafted, or even if they weren't drafted, if they enlisted, it was like, you know, they weren't sure if they supported the U.S., you know, being in the war, which at the time, most Americans were very much in favor of us being involved in the war. Nowadays, obviously not so much. We've kind of sort of changed our tune a little bit, but so anyways, all that being said, I really enjoyed, you know, that aspect of it, and just, you know, how it portrayed the I guess the feeling that came with a war like that, sort of like the Hurt Locker, you know, where it really accurately portrays kind of the fear and just the nature of the war, how that movie, it's, you know, it's just super dusty and hot, and, you know, all this, and this war, or this movie, you know, it's, you just feel the mud and the humidity and everything, you know. But, you know, some obviously like military logistic things that don't really make sense, but, you know, in a movie you kind of let go of that stuff and just enjoy the story, the cinematic experience. You know, so it's, yeah, I think what I read as far as inaccuracies is, basically the, what's his name, Dengler, who, you know, Christian Bale's character, basically he was saying that, like, the torture and stuff that you see was nowhere even close to, like, how bad it actually was. Mm-hmm. So yeah, just kind of goes to show what that war was like. But anyways, yeah, I think overall I'd give it a B+, because, you know, I really like all those elements of it, but, you know, it does take a while to kind of get into it, which, as Robert said, it's, you know, I understand why, it's just that it would, but still, it's just, as I watch it, I'm like, all right, let's get going here, you know? And yeah, a lot of characters are introduced just kind of as plot devices, I feel like, which, you know, it's, which is fine. It's just, it's always feels like, you know, it just feels kind of like a cheat to do that, I guess.
Will, what is your rating of this film?
I might have to give it a 6.5 out of 10, just because It was a decent movie, just not something that's going to be like, oh, I want to rewatch it, or it feels more impactful. I don't know. It doesn't feel impactful to me as much, but still a decent movie. So that's the reason why for my rating.
Yeah, I'm going one up. I'm giving it a 7. I get. Yeah, it can be pretty slow. And I just, that's kind of what I felt throughout it. I mean, I totally understand why it's there. I think it's important. But yeah, I mean, I still enjoyed it, though. I think it's an amazing Christian Bale performance. And that's the point, I think. It's just an amazing performance. And that's kind of the biggest thing that's going to sit with me with this. And obviously just the impact of the war and the story, kind of emphasizing kind of what we already talked about with the war. Brandon, what is your overall rating?
I think, like, when I look at a movie like this, it's hard for me to look at certain war movies and try to separate them. But I think that this one is pretty easy for me to separate from the pack, just because it just feels different than other war movies. I'm not going to go too high, just because I want to leave some room for other movies, because, my God, if I had to keep giving out 8s and 9s all year, I'm going to have such a hard time ranking movies. I think for me, and I saw what the audience score was on Rotten Tomatoes, and I kind of agree with the audience. So I'm going to say 7.5 out of 10. I think I probably might rewatch it, and that might bring it to an 8. So anywhere between, so I'm kind of just like the first one. I'm like, somewhere between a 7.5 and an 8. Just because, I mean, I love, man, the Christian Bale aside, I just love that this movie is just kind of a different kind of feel to a war movie. It just seems like other war movies we've done have been great, but I just feel like I'm kind of watching the same movie over and over. I didn't feel that way with this one. So I definitely do think that a war movie that's somewhat different compared to all the others, gets a huge boost when you add Christian Bale to it to be the main star of it. So, yeah, I think 7.5 is fair. I think that, I actually probably would rewatch it, believe it or not. It's one of the few war movies I would go back and be like, maybe I'll pick up on things that I didn't get the first time. So, I might even do it before I go to bed tonight. So, I think 7.5 out of 10 is strong. I think that's where I'm going to keep it for now.
Yeah, well, good stuff, guys. 2 hours of solid content. We're going to be back once again at this time on Sunday recording. Of course, this will come out as soon as we can, as we always do. Thank you to Brandon. Thank you to Shane. Thank you to Josh for joining us. Always great to have you. And always thank you to Will as well. Enjoy watching the national title tomorrow. And we'll see you back next Sunday night.
Let's do it.
Let's go.
See you later, everybody.